This week's episode of Buffy Virgin is brought to you by DennisComics.com. Dennis is a cartoonist who appears on almost every episode of Buffy Virgin. He raves about monsters and recommends great horror movies that no one else has ever heard of. He has two short comics in the Halloween issue Devilthink that came out last year. Dennis's original graphic novel, Amelia, which is really the thing I should mention first. It's very Lovecraft meets David Cronenberg, and I know other people have said that, but it's a wonderful, dark, and interesting read. Pinup art by Dennis St. John is also featured in issue 5 of Rich Tomasso's She-Wolf, a super interesting read. She-Wolf is beautiful, artsy, and strange. If, when you're listening to Buffy Virgin, if any of Dennis's recommendations for other films and stuff resonate with you at all, then you would absolutely love his comics. Dennis has a really well-developed horror sensibility that comes across in his comics. If you like horror stuff at all, you'd really enjoy his stuff. So get your horror comics fixed at DennisComics.com. That's Dennis with one N, D-E-N-I-S, and comics with an X because it's cool, C-O-M-I-X. In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Well, welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. On the podcast today, me, Michael Poley, the Buffy virgin. Dennis, a horror comic and cartoon artist.
Hey, guys. Good to see you.
Travis.
Hey, everyone.
And John.
Hey, folks. How we doing?
It is a full cast for a fantastic episode, Season 2, Episode 8, The Dark Age. So let's start out with that amazing plot summary as provided by John Landis. As provided by John.
Late at night, a sweaty and disturbed-looking man desperately searches the grounds of the Sunnydale High campus. He's looking for Rupert Giles. What he finds is an angry zombie named Deirdre. Unable to escape, the man is strangled to unconsciousness by Deirdre, who promptly dissolves into a viscous, blue fluid. The next day is a real roller coaster for Giles. He is awoken by terrifying heavy metal music video nightmares.
Ooh.
But he does get to explain to Buffy why guarding the hospital's blood delivery is important.
Yay!
And then the gang just makes fun of him.
Ooh.
But that's okay, Miss Callender is here.
Yay!
Oh, but she's destroyed his favorite smelly book.
Boo.
Actually, she didn't really destroy it. And she wants to come over to his place for a sex date.
Yay!
But then the police show up and tell him that his old friend from London, Henry Phillip, is dead.
Boo.
But then his body has been found in Sunnydale, so no need to buy a last-minute transatlantic flight.
Yay!
And once he gets to the morgue, Giles notices a strange tattoo on the man's arm.
Yay?
So, after a day like that, perhaps it isn't too surprising that Giles fails to show up on time to meet Buffy and defend the blood supply. She does okay defending it on her own, with a little help from Angel, who is hanging around the blood bank for totally normal and innocent reasons. Still, Buffy's worried about Giles. She shows up at his place, only to find him worried, unshaven, and a little drunk. Giles shoos her away and, once alone, makes a transatlantic call. It turns out that his friend Deirdre has died. Reaching for another glass of scotch, we notice Giles' arm. He has the same tattoo as Philip's corpse. Speaking of Philip's corpse, it's starting to get up and to move around. Kicking it at Saturday school, Buffy and the gang are really starting to worry about Giles. They're just about to go back and check on him again, but instead, they find another middle-aged Englishman skulking around the library. It's Ethan Rain, the creepy costume purveyor from the Halloween episode earlier this season. Ethan, if you'll recall, actually does know Giles from their misspent youths. He has Buffy mention something about the Mark of Igon over the phone to Giles. Giles shakes off his hangover and tells Buffy she's in danger. In fact, that danger is manifesting itself right now, in the library, in the form of an undead Briton with a stick and poke. Buffy and the gang get the situation under control, though, just long enough for Giles to show up and reveal a little of his secret inner badass. However, he isn't able to save Zombie Philip from turning into Liquid Pledge, or to save Jenny from getting her passed-out hand all in said zombie goo. It's okay, though. Jenny wakes up, and Willow finds a book with some much-needed exposition. Turns out the demon Igon can possess any unconscious person who bears his mark. The demon has been jumping around from person to person, which explains all the zombies. Good thing there were no dead or unconscious people around when Philip went gooey. Oh, wait. Back at Giles HQ, Jenny wants to pick up their sex date. But with all the corpses of his old friends walking around, Giles isn't really in the mood. Jenny's advances get more aggressive and more creepy. She's possessed by Igon. Buffy shows up just in time to chase off Monster Ms. Callender and to hear the full story from the G-Man's mouth. Him and his college buddies? They used to induce possession in themselves as a novel way to get high. It was all fun and games until someone died. Now, the monster is back, and it's after everyone in the old gang. Reluctantly, Buffy now has to protect Ethan. Well, Ethan loves this idea, but he has his own version of it, knocking Buffy out and tattooing the mark of Igon on her, and burning the tattoo off of his own skin with acid, and then running off. It nearly works, too, but at the last minute, Willow shows up with Angel in tow. A little strangulation later, and the beast jumps into Angel's body. Except, instead of taking over, Angel's face does a few sideways somersaults before turning back into lovable old Angel. You see, the demon inside of him can totally beat up the demon that was inside of Jenny. And everyone lives happily ever after. Except Giles, who's lost all of his non-evil friends from college. And Miss Callender, who's been totally traumatized. But other than that, yeah, happily ever after.
Yay!
Wow, that was another great summary. So funny. Love all those jokes.
Very sexy.
Very sexy. So the way we talk about Buffy, we're going to talk about weird noticings and trivia, go into some plot stuff, some questions for the group, some themes. Then we'll go into predictions, Dennis's kill count, and recommendations. So it's quite a few things. So let's get started here. So my weird noticing right away from this is the Giles and company when he's like having his
still sleep. Saying Giles
when he has this like dream
write it phonetically
when he has this like nightmare of what you know his this world when they were trying to you know do the sleep monster stuff together what that was like it looks like a total weird old ad for like a Ouija board game like the way that montage comes together it's so slick and rad and it totally needs to be repeated it just feels like an 80s board game is about to be sold. And I feel like if you could just cut that clip together and then just cut in the Ouija name, it would totally work.
It's better than the movie Ouija.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Also, I watched, this is so dumb, but I watched this on Google Play after the recommendation that Google Play was the best place to watch Buffy. And the montage plays twice, the opening montage, which is super weird and unnecessary. And Giles does the monologue introing it.
Huh. That's a glitch.
And then, John, you're saying here Giles wears full-body pajamas?
I mean, I feel like we should probably just get all of this out of the way at once. Like, there's a lot of observations to be made in this episode about the Giles lifestyle.
Yes, all right, let's do that. Let us talk about Giles' lifestyle.
There's nothing wrong with that lifestyle. That's a great lifestyle.
There's nothing, no, I love Giles' lifestyle. He's an esthete. Like, he's awesome, but... So I noticed he wears full body pajamas.
Yeah, it's the first time in his place, right? Like we haven't been to the Giles house, so there's a lot to see.
Exactly.
I thought it would just be like
a sweet Tiffany lamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really well decorated, like really like above his means, it seems.
Well, you think so? I mean, he's pulling down two salaries.
Is he getting paid as a watcher too?
Definitely getting paid as a watcher.
Yeah, he must. He's got a lot of really nice wooden furniture. You know, I think if Travis, can you show us what's going on to your right? Because I believe you just have a magnificent wooden piece that you don't want to talk about necessarily, but this beautiful wooden like entertainment center. Anyway, that just came in. You are living the Giles lifestyle. You just need less light in your house. You need to like.
Is that Amish furniture? Is that Amish entertainment?
Yes, it's all Amish, yes. It weighs hundreds of pounds.
The thing that I noticed...
Travis gets all of his wood straight from the Amish.
I do. They make the best furniture. What can you say?
We could do a different podcast just about wood and furniture. I think we have enough knowledge. I worked antique repair for 2 years. I can talk about teak.
The thing about Giles is that how long has he been living in California? Because he moves to Sunnydale, right? it's been about a year, I think, maybe a little more than a year that he's lived in Sunnydale. And he's got a lot of stuff. So did he like, and it looks like California stuff. Like it looks like vintage California stuff that you would find in antiques. If you were antiquing in California, it doesn't look like he brought it over with him from the UK. It doesn't look that old.
So this is where there's like a side fan fiction that we could all write together about how Giles and how Spike got all their furniture together. Because it's like, they didn't show up and they have so much stuff. And like, where's the moving truck? And like, what other stuff is in there? Because probably half the library also was shipped from England as well. Just basically,
oh, yeah.
Like Giles basically.
Yeah, he definitely shipped that library.
He uses the library like it's a second home, you know? It's like half his shit is over there.
Yeah. I would watch some boring fanfic that's just about like him and Spike going antiquing over the weekends. And like, oh, I think this doll is more in your styles.
Oh, no. So the way that would work is they'd inadvertently be at the same antique store together and they'd have like a scuffle would break out, you know, but like they weren't planning on antiquing together.
Yeah, but the fight is about them both going for the same lamp at the same time. Like,
this is great. Writes itself.
Yeah. Or like Spike can't get a hold of some choice piece of furniture because it's like being displayed outside and like he can't go out in the sun.
Then Giles gets it. And then Spike tries to rob Giles.
Okay, yeah. So it's like this special nighttime antique mall, right? That's like a once a year tradition where they do like a midnight antique mall.
Most antique shops are appointment
only.
Appointment only. So you could schedule the appointment for 8 o'clock at night.
An appointment is technically an invitation, right? So it's fine for Spike.
Yeah.
And it's also a place of business, unless it's also their home. So it's not
the antique shop I worked at, the owners lived on the property, not in the same building, but in the same lot. So I think a vampire probably couldn't get in there.
They could get in the.
That's what I told myself.
They could get on the. They could certainly get on the lot, but they couldn't get in the home. But they could get in the other place.
You think so? I don't know. Wouldn't the spell work over the whole area?
Trying to think if I know no because it's a public area. It's a public area.
If you write off like a room in your house as like a home office on your taxes, then vampires can get into that room. Is how that works.
Okay.
No. They could only get in that room if they could get through the rest of the house.
They could get in through the window or something.
So this is why your studio is fucked. In the center of your house. That's where you put the home office. But otherwise, they can't get.
Well, unless they could jump dimensions, and then they could just hop right in.
Skylight. They could drop into it. Maybe.
And the other thing Giles has is he has a wash basin, which is like there's being a fuddy-duddy, and then there's having an actual wash basin, which even though you have running water in your house, you still fill with water so that you can dramatically wash your face when you feel frustrated. That's really over the top, I feel like.
It does add some drama. I didn't know you could do like a wash basin scene, but they get a lot out of that. I there's probably more props in Giles' house. I feel like, I don't want to jump to predictions, but we are going to get way more prop drama out of Giles' house and his eccentric lifestyle.
The wash basin was very good prop work.
it's good. It's good set design for sure. His house is. Exactly what you said does make sense. It looks like he's lived there forever, and that's how he's accumulated all these cool antiques, because there's no way he got his hands on some of that stuff in England. And if
California antiquing isn't like, you know, since California is like a younger part of the country than the East, like most of the good antiques are in the East, you know, so even like, I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard to get good antiques out west.
Maybe he did a road trip like Spike. Maybe that's why Spike drove into Sunnydale. He was on a massive antique road trip.
I've got to bring this to California.
I think the beginning of the episode was really fun. Beginning of the beginning episode where. Just like a lot of drama at night. And I just like the idea that the janitor knows that Giles is still there. And like, it's just,
I felt bad for the janitor that he calls him Mr. Giles. Like, I don't know.
Like, there's two great bit characters in this episode. That janitor and the guy at the morgue are two great bit characters. Yeah. I'm surprised the janitor didn't get killed or whatever.
Maybe it's just because, like, I used to be a janitor. Yeah. I know John used to be, like, I felt sympathy. It was like, why is he got a, like, he's not a student. He doesn't have to call him Mr. Giles. Come on.
Well, I still think, like, you give a lot of
class
to his teachers.
Yeah, what the fuck time is it, too?
No, this is all real. This is all part of my life. I work in a school. The janitor comes in when I'm there way too late because I'm procrastinated on something and I'm working late. And he calls me Mr. Landis. So it's all
tough.
Real.
It's totally tough. Realistic. That's all I'm saying.
True to life. I think like, you know, people are generally respectful and in that arena. I think I think it's pretty normal to still say it, is my hunch.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's like, oh, that didn't strike me as weird. I'm just saying, like, it made me sad.
I don't get that.
No, because he's been a janitor. He's like, feels that man's pain. And, like, being called upon at an unknown time for directions. Leave that man alone.
Yeah, leave him alone.
So moving on here, John, you said you had to look up who Gavin Rossdale and Amy Yip are. I did not.
Well, you are the
I remember Gavin
master.
Rossdale. I don't remember
I had to look
who
up
Amy Yip is.
No. But I already looked her up like a while ago. Anyway, she was on my mind.
I'm looking her up right now.
But I love the... You know, the call, the like very weird 90s calls of like John Cusack and Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah.
Gavin Rossdale seems like someone that could get on the show, even. Like, I don't know what his fame is like in this night. Probably, maybe he's too big for the show.
No, I don't know. This
I
show
mean,
gets
Bush
pretty,
was pretty
big.
I remember Bush being a.
So, in your. And
I don't know. They're still in Chibo Motto territory.
So in your game of Anywhere But Here, who's your, like, 90s crush that's present? And you can't use Sarah Michelle Gellar, okay?
And Where We Are. That's
oh,
the
yeah.
Game
Anywhere
is,
But
like,
Here.
You gotta be somewhere and with a 90s crush.
If you need to think about it for, you know,
wait,
another
is this,
10 years.
Is this, like, am I answering for myself now or for myself as a teenager?
I think you have to answer for yourself as a teenager because that's the most interesting. Is your 90s teenager? Well, shoot.
Right.
But now, now we have so many, you know, partners and people in our lives. I feel like we're going to offend them somehow.
John's going to choose. Who is that lady on Star Trek TNG?
Seven of Nine?
Not Seven of Nine. Who's
the, no, she's from Voyager. You're thinking Deanna Troi, probably.
Deanna Troi. John's probably going to choose
In the bunny suit.
Deanna Troi on whatever Star Trek
no. planet. emphatically not. No, the women on Star Trek are not sexy. Star Trek is a lot of things. It is not sexy.
Not the original series.
Not
the original series
anyway.
Is pretty sexy, man.
Okay,
I'll defend the original series
okay.
as
speaking
sexy.
Strictly about TNG. Yeah, okay.
Oh, is this a ring the bell for sexy. Star Trek talk?
Deep Space Nine.
So
eventually
have
planned to bring it up later. No, I think my 90s Anywhere But Here would be Gillian Anderson in in the woods looking for a Sasquatch.
That's pretty good.
I'm pretty sure.
Travis, didn't you spend like an hour in a comic shop holding a Gillian Anderson poster afraid to buy it?
Eventually I did. So Gillian Anderson, I guess, could be for me as well. But you could also do a shout out to the scream queens of the late 90s. So Jennifer Love Hewitt is always an acceptable answer. And so Jennifer Love Hewitt,
I'm just going to go with Janine Garofalo in the coffee shop because that was like very 90s. Nice.
Can I go Elijah Dushku or is that cheating?
Why
not
is that
cheating? Not cheating.
All right, it's not cheating. Okay, yeah.
Oh, because it's on the on Buffy. It's a Buffy character. Got it. At some point.
at some point.
So I love this funny morgue guy because it's so obnoxious and uncalled for the funny morgue guy to be like, have you had breakfast yet? Like when Giles gets called in. And then previous to that scene, there's this weird bit with Cordelia, like not understanding that how the gravity of the situation with the police or something. And she's trying to get help with a parking ticket. And at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, she's totally playing like a really fun Buffy-like character right now. Because I feel like Buffy, I don't know. I felt like Cordelia could play Buffy. Like they could totally switch those character actors around and it'd be totally fun. But they don't obviously go with
Sarah. You know the trivia there, right?
Oh, there's trivia there?
Yeah, the famous story is that they actually originally auditioned for each other's roles. I think is right. Travis, is that right?
I think something like that was right, yeah, that there was some changing of the casting. But we, of course, know that Sarah Michelle Gellar can play an evil character because she does that a few years later in Cruel Intentions. So she could have hit all the notes of Cordelia without batting an eye.
Yeah, well, I felt like it was like pitch perfect Buffy type character coming in there, even though that she was playing the Cordy part, but just like the style and stuff, it was like, that feels like Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Do you feel that Cordelia was acting better in that scene than she did in season one?
What are you trying to get me to say?
It's
that
her a question.
Acting is improved over season one. Everything is improved over season one.
Hooray.
You believe she's a better actress now.
During the Anywhere But Here game, the outside of their campus looked totally different to me. It looked like Sunnydale High had changed locations.
Oh. Has it? Does anybody know the trivia on that?
It just looked like for one scene, it was a totally different campus. I just thought like pointing that out.
So next up here, John says, shouldn't Buffy let them take the blood? Every bag is one less vampire victim.
Right. I mean, this is behavior we should encourage in vampires.
But that blood is going to be used to save people's lives, right?
Yeah, I know. But like, I mean, I get that. But it at least they're indirectly killing people rather than directly killing people. And I don't know. Does anybody know a doctor we could ask, like, how often are blood transfusions successful in saving a life? Is it all the time? Even if it's only, like, 50% of the time, then, you know, because vampire attacks are fatal all the time. So then that's still an improvement, right?
Doctor.
That's some rough math. That's some Machiavellian math right there, man. No, they shouldn't have they shouldn't be able to raid the blood bank. No way. And, yeah. That's because I guess because they were just like pigging out on it too. Number one, they were like immediately just like drinking as much as they can and
spilling it everywhere.
Yeah.
What someone needs to like organize is like the equivalent of like a needle exchange, but for blood.
Doesn't that happen?
That's a larger question about like the universe, you know, like the world where vampires are real, like.
So they deal with this. They deal with this issue in a different vampire TV series called Moonlight. It's like this specific thing that you're talking about. But then we know that vampires don't have to drink human blood to survive. They can drink pig's blood or other blood. So they should really
pretty much any mammal, right?
Yeah.
Do they ever drink bird blood?
Birds aren't mammals, right? There's not a whole lot of blood in a bird, if I remember. Probably wouldn't get a lot out of it.
If I remember.
What if it's like an emu?
That bird slaying.
I mean, we've never had, I've never read anything about a vampire like attacking a whale or something crazy like that. Like, how many vampires could like...
Man, that'd be great. Because vampires don't need to breathe, so they could just live underwater eating whales. They, like, eat the same whale for like...
Vampire Whalers is a pretty exciting, like, short, you know, six series, miniseries.
Think of all those.
And, like, one of the vampires is probably Ahab, or like maybe Ahab's like leading a bunch of vampires who just want the whale blood.
There's that Swamp Thing comic where the vampires are in a town that gets flooded, and they realize they can just live underwater, and they don't have to deal with sunlight, and then that within like a generation they start to evolve to like like be able to swim better and stuff. They become like fish vampires.
Whoa.
It's a good
comic. That's really scary. I don't like underwater vampires.
You should read, it's part of the Alan Moore Bessette Swamp Thing run. It's good.
So the movie I was thinking of is this movie Midnight Sun, and it has this same exchange though, where the somebody is buying blood from a hospital, like an order, you know, whatever, one of these guys that's like has access but not enough money, so they're totally cool with selling blood. And it's a great little scene in that film, this rad indie movie.
I think,
for recommendations.
Nice. I think that also happens in that British TV series, Almost Human. Did you see that? It's also a Sci-Fi Channel series. They redid it. It's pretty good.
It's a super popular way. And then Buffy leaves Angel to watch the blood. He's a vampire. Like, it's so much trust. Oh, yeah.
And what was Angel doing there to begin with? That is never really clearly established. Is he going to, like, stop this from happening? Or is he going to just, like...
No, it happens every Tuesday or whatever day it is.
It's delivery day. Today, which is Tuesday.
So, Dennis, you have this really good observation here. This is probably the first time we see cops investigating a murder.
Yeah, right? Like, they're actually investigating at the beginning of this. Go Sunnydale. Start doing this.
So, they only investigate murders of people that aren't going to that high school, right? So, it's like if it's a stranger, then it's okay to report on. But if it's a local, like, cover that shit up.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, for Cordelia, I think it's great that she didn't divulge Giles' secret that he had to meet with the cops. It's all played up like, Cordelia, how can you not tell the rest of the gang this? But it's like, no, Cordelia did the right thing. She didn't say anything because ostensibly she like forgot or didn't pay enough attention. But you know, essentially, she didn't do anything really wrong by not telling everyone else about it.
Another weird noticing, the stigma against drinking alone is really intense. So when, after Buffy deals with the blood hospital, whatever scenario, and goes to Giles's place to be like, what's going on? It's like the big reveal, I guess, to the rest of the gang the next day at the computer lab is that Giles was drinking alone, and how sad and terrible that is.
At least he has single malt scotch. I mean, he's doing it classy.
Totally.
If drinking alone is wrong, I don't want to be right. I just want somebody to drink with me. I don't know. But.
Hey, you think he'd call up Ethan Rain and sort things out, but nope. They are not. John, you're saying Cordelia and Xander are the only kids behind in computer class?
Yeah.
That's all. Yep. It's weird.
I do like that. It's weird that it's so there. Convenient when Buffy shows up that they don't have to like pretend, they don't have to do any like code, because like, oh, this class is just filled with everybody who knows. Like, how convenient.
And of course, we have a horny Xander joke in here at the computer class. You know,
about Abakai?
No, and when class we're gonna do Buffy. Did I fall asleep already? You know, such a silly horny Xander joke. God, I remember how much I hate them.
Yeah, Xander is a general asshole. I mean, not just in this episode, but in this particular scene where Willow comes in and Buffy comes in and she's worried about Giles because he, you know, like our friend is in trouble. He seems to be depressed. And Xander just keeps cracking jokes like for a while. Into like everyone explaining how worried they are about Giles. He just keeps being silly.
He's always trashing Giles. Remember in the Frankenstein episode, he was like, she's already not bothered by the fact that you're a librarian. Like, he's really got it against Giles.
Man, we didn't talk about Giles's hot kiss that he got just before class from Jenny Callender, right? Like, That's a dangerous liaison sexy. In a school, yeah.
And I don't know. Also, the way Giles is so bumbly, where he's like, nobody's ever called me a sexy fuddy-duddy and all this. The first time I watched it, I was like, are we supposed to believe Giles is a virgin right now? I've never kissed a woman before.
Yep, just boring TV acting. Sorry. If he was too into sex, you know, they would have would happened already. He's got to show some. He's got to fight it.
but my purity.
Dennis, you're talking about old tattoos look brand new. Yep.
Yeah, when we see Giles's tattoo, it looks so fresh.
I was surprised.
That's a pet peeve.
Yeah, and he lied to the cops about it too. He's like, I've never seen that tattoo before. Meanwhile, so I'm looking into Act 3 right here. If anybody wants to talk about any of these things here. Dennis, you're saying Ethan has some serious guns. Is he flexing to impress Buffy?
Yeah, after he knocks her out and he does the tattoo on himself and he removes it, just like, he's got some serious old man guns. I'm impressed with, I think it's, he's flexing the whole time just to impress this teenage girl who he's already got tied up, but it's not sexual. It's just about his ego. I mean, but also how does Ethan even like knock her out? Like, she's just tied with one rope on a table. She's a slayer. She could have broken that table, right? It's not like that table was made.
Well, and that is a damn like convenient nail. But he like there's one nail protruding from the bottom of the table, like 3 inches.
I don't even feel like it was necessary.
I mean,
like,
I guess it
given
could
her
happen.
Level of strength, like.
I mean, it's the same convenience, you know, we always see, like, when she's thrown into a yard and lands near a tiny fence. I mean, it's the same level of convenience we've come to expect. It's kind of silly. I think, like, it's just a great gag. I don't know. I mean, she's totally broken off, but it's, like, more funny this way. I forgot we should tell all the listeners that we actually watched this episode together for the most part.
Some people.
So Michael, Dennis, and myself watched this episode together. So it was kind of a fun first.
Yeah, it was totally fun. I wanted to watch more. I wanted to watch the rest of season 2, but we didn't have time. Also, you know, we're trying to do other things while we're together. So do you want to go into questions or any other observations people want to, or we're noticing some stuff?
I do want to point out the fact that Ethan and Giles didn't have their tattoos removed ever. At the end, Buffy says that she's going to get hers removed and it's going to cost her allowance, but that's it. And that means laser tattoo. I looked it up. Laser tattoo removal has been around since around 1990. They had been testing it since the 60s and it's been around since 1990. So like that means it's like 5 or 6 years that both Giles and Ethan have like had this on their to-do list, like remove evil demon tattoo, but they just can't get around to it is what I'm kind of getting from that. And there's other ways to remove tattoos too. Like, you know, you can get them cut off. Like at the very least, you can just get it sliced off and have a big scar. That's just like,
yeah, apparently
this was a small problem.
Yeah. So they could just get rid of the tattoo and they're not going to be haunted anymore.
That's what Ethan seems to think. He's going to burn it off with acid, which is apparently, I looked it up, also a real way that people get rid of tattoos. But so apparently is injecting pigeon dung, but that's a very old fashioned.
But I couldn't figure out if it was like a one-for-one exchange. Like, yes, Ethan was able to get rid of his tattoo, but only after he made an unfortunate soul get one of the tattoos. If that's the requirement.
That makes more sense.
And then, then Giles would have kept his, and Ethan, I'm surprised, didn't try to get rid of his earlier because he's an evil, evil character.
Right.
I think that they thought that Igon was
also old news.
Dissipated, and they just felt like the Igon stuff, part of their life was over. So,
like, why spend the money? Why have the pain to get it, to remove it? Maybe. But I still think there might be some sort of an initiation where you got to have someone to take your seat at the horrible death table from Igon.
I just like that the library cage was back. Drink for the library cage. One of my favorite pieces because it always works when it needs to work and they can always break out when they need to. And the CG slime in this episode was super lame.
Library cage is really lame. Library cage needs to be in the. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
there's one shot in particular where I can understand it for the effect, like when the body dissipates into green slime, but there's one shot where it's Jenny's hand, and it's like, that could have been a physical slime. They didn't need to CG it then. It would have been looked so much better for just that one. But overall, I think the demon looks really great in this episode, especially when it's in full Jenny form. Like, it's a dope looking demon.
Yeah, and her acting is really good. Like, the scene where she's sort of like heavily seducing Giles and then turns slowly, sort of ramps up the evil through the scene, that really works for me. I think that scene is really creepy. I really like that. Even before they do the voice thing, like the voice thing actually kind of takes it a little too far. It really works.
I love how she jumps out face first out of Giles's window. Doesn't she run out of that and just like swan dive out of his apartment? I think that's.
I think when it's when Jenny's in full Igon, it's not the actress playing the part anymore. It's a stunt man, I think.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say that library cage needs to be in like a Buffy action figure playset of some kind.
Yeah, like, definitely.
It's totally a weird prop that like you'd be confused at, and you're like, nope, it's on the show. They use it all the time.
And it's got a button where it breaks in pieces. And you're like, the werewolf's out, or whatever.
Are there like there's probably a million Buffy action figures. I feel like there's just so many characters. Or not. Maybe they don't have enough of these one-off characters.
There's a couple. I think the Buffy Michelle Geller, like on her Twitter page, occasionally will post about her Buffy action figure.
There's definitely a Buffy Pops, vinyl Pops. There might have been some, like, in the 90s, there might have been a line of figures.
Yeah, but I think even then they were the more like arty Todd McFarlane action figures and less actually fun action figures that you would have a million of. There was like 5 cool looking ones instead of like a million shitty looking ones the way action figures should be.
Yeah. Oh man, that'd be great if they did like just a full like demon after demon after demon. That'd be great.
I'm sure that you could make you get a resin printer or something and make those. But I don't know what the market for that would be like.
Was it like a website called Demons?
Wasn't there like a website called Demons, 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 or was that like a book? If you remember from Angel, you're like demon after demon. I think there was like a website called Demons, Demons, Demons.
Because they didn't have Giles Library, so they had to research online on Demons, Demons, Demons.
Okay, so moving on to questions here. Dennis, you said Giles isn't a breakfast guy. Are you? What's your breakfast go-to? That's fun.
I hope that's appropriate for questions.
That's very appropriate. I like eggs and toast with beans. That's my go-to. Oh,
nice.
Very British.
So you do that like every day?
I mean, not every day. I feel like, you know, your breakfast cravings depend on what you ate for dinner and when and stuff. So, like, I don't know. When I can, that's what I like. Otherwise, it's cereal or nothing.
What type of beans, Mike?
What type of beans? Refried.
Nice.
That's less British, the refried beans. You should have baked beans.
Ugh. Baked beans for breakfast sounds terrible.
No, it's good. You got to get, American baked beans are too sweet. There's too much sugar in them. If you get like Heinz baked beans in the blue can, if you can find them, they're better.
John, you're officially a red coat. Just want to let you know.
There's a lot of opinions about beans on this podcast.
Travis loves beans. He discovered his love of beans during this podcast.
Are you going to march with General Cornwall tomorrow? John, no, I'm just kidding. The Revolutionary War, folks. That's okay. That's all good. So for me, for breakfast, any type of bean, pinto bean. Well, it's like pinto or Italian or northern bean or navy or I'll eat anything really. Pasta for breakfast.
Jumping beans.
Garbanzo beans.
Magic beans. No, not magic beans. It sounds like a drug.
Shrimp bread. Beans.
Fried beans.
Breakfast, I guess I usually eat more hearty breakfast, but it's mostly not breakfasty foods. It's something like beans or pasta or something that you would eat for lunch or soup. I had a lot of soup for breakfast. Yeah. And toast with olive oil.
Mike taught me about bulletproof coffee, and I've done that a bit. I can't really say I recommend it, but if you're too lazy to make real food in the morning like I am, it does technically constitute food, so it works.
I do a breakfast smoothie that's cold coffee from yesterday, a banana, yogurt, or peanut butter, usually yogurt, and then protein, and then I magic bullet blend it. And that's my weekday breakfast. And then weekends, I like to treat myself and do bacon and eggs and toast.
That's nice. That's actually pretty reasonable. Yeah, bulletproof coffee is, I'm really embarrassed that I actually do this because it comes from like these like really like bullshitty parts of the internet of people trying to like personal improvement kind of bullshit parts of the internet. But it's coffee and butter and this MCT oil, which is supposedly chemically different from regular coconut oil, but is probably just like literal snake oil.
Did you buy it at a frat?
I did not buy it at a frat. I got the off-brand MCT oil from Amazon, not the actual bulletproof trademarked brand, because that stuff's like $30 a bottle. But here's the thing. I don't know, but like all of the coconut oil, I've tried with just regular coconut oil and it's fine. Regular coconut oil and butter and coffee, you do feel not hungry until lunchtime. It achieves that goal.
Yeah, that's my main goal, is just to like not snack until lunch. Like I need to have energy, because if I don't eat breakfast, I don't have energy. But I need to like be filled up enough to like resist the snack temptations at work for a few hours.
Yeah, I mean we have so many snacks at the office. Worst case, I'll just have a granola bar and a bunch of peanut butter pretzels. But that's a sad man's breakfast.
Yeah, sometimes when I don't make my smoothie, I get we have these like peanut butter and jelly bars at work that I grab, and they're like,
are they all like peanuts branded products? That's like the free stuff that you can get. It's all like,
no, stuff. We try to not eat peanuts at work since we don't like that connection.
Oh, it's too literal for you. Okay.
Yeah, it's too literal for us.
So I want to go back to this bulletproof. I've never heard of this bulletproof coffee thing. So you basically make coffee and then you put it in a blender with butter and coconut oil.
Yeah, and you emulsify the oils. It comes out sort of like a cappuccino, like a latte consistency. And it's fine. I wouldn't say it's great, but it does what the claim is. Well, so there's a lot of claims on the internet. One of the claims is just that it's food and it'll get you through the day and you'll have energy, which is basically true. The other claim is that it like improves your cognitive functioning. And of course, if that doesn't work, it's because you're not buying expensive enough version of the oil from the right guy on the internet. And of course, you also have to buy his brand of coffee beans, which costs like 8 times more than regular coffee, and not regular butter, but like his branded ghee, which comes like imported cows and shit. I don't know.
It's butter from cows that are fed coconut oil.
It's a whole cult on the internet of this bullshit, and I'm sure it's all bullshit. Like, but it is a quick breakfast, and that's all I'm looking for.
Well, yeah, it's part of this whole self-improvement product line of bullshit that Bulletproof Coffee does. And yeah, there's a lot of that kind of guru crap. It's very West Coast Silicon Valley kind of stuff. And probably the same people are also recommending that you microdose LSD for better cognitive function.
Yeah, I guess I've had all those.
I'm not doing that.
Yes.
Yet.
Oh, yes. You just need to get little capsules and then little LSD, and then you dilute it, and then you create these micro.
It's better than antidepressants.
Because I guess most days I have like the version of the bulletproof coffee, which is I eat all the ingredients that is described, the butter, And coffee. And I guess I don't necessarily eat the coconut oil, but I guess I would eat the olive oil instead of the coconut oil.
I guess there's supposed to be something magical about coconut oil and about specifically the oil. I don't, you're a doctor. I'm not, like, I don't fucking believe it. So I don't, you tell me.
Calling it snake oil is totally, it's totally the 21st century snake oil, coconut oil. Like, it's supposed to do everything. Like, you know, like you cook everything in it and you like put it on your skin. And like, I mean, we should just be like 90% coconut oil and we'll live forever.
Guys, let's not get sued by this unnamed or this coffee brand company.
I already named it. Bulletproof is the name of it.
Don't say it again. Don't keep saying this thing that we're
So this is the Buffy Virgin Nutrition Podcast segment. Ask Dr. Travis. It's a call-in health show.
I think this personality of breakfast for dinner, or like the personality of what someone eats for dinner, is kind of like a fun personality test, for sure, because there seems to be a lot of variability. You'll have people who are staunch, people who culturally they only eat oatmeal or they only eat cereal. You'll have people who say, I don't eat breakfast at all. I just can't eat it. Not interested. Not hungry. And then you'll have people who would eat breakfast, but would not eat the traditional Western breakfast food. They eat something that would not traditionally have been served at breakfast. So it's a totally cool concept. A question, I think. Yeah. I'm glad you brought it up because it's
an important question.
Who did I try to feed? I tried to feed beans to. Dennis, when you were here, I made you eat. Yeah. Did I make you eat beans or did I make you eat couscous in the morning? I can't remember what I made you eat.
We ate beans and couscous, I think.
Yes, beans and couscous.
And
cheese. You seem to like it enough. I couldn't really get a gauge for how you liked it.
It's more than I'm used to eating in the morning. I'm like, because I said I do the shakes. So it was kind of a lot in the morning for me, but it was good. And it was definitely always lovely to wake up and have breakfast served to me. Like, that was beautiful.
Well, thank you.
All right, moving. Next question here, John. You have this great question about tattoos. So from John Landis, as far as I know, we're the last four people in our generation who are untattooed. Am I right? So I have no tattoo. My wife has tattoos. Wants a lot of tattoos. I mean, yeah. Everybody I know has tattoos, except for you three.
Yeah, no tramp stamp.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've designed a couple tattoos for people. I for years wanted a tattoo of just like an ink bottle, but a lot of cartoonists have that, so I feel like I waited too long on that. I've definitely thought about it a bunch of times, but never.
I thought it would be cool to get like the Starfleet insignia tattooed like right over my nipple, so I could like when I'm naked. I'm sure other people have that though.
I've seen the not described that way, but I've definitely seen the insignia tattooed on.
What's crazy to me is like having seen people who are in their 30s get fully tatted in like a month, going from no tattoos to like both sleeves and the back, and it's just nuts. And I like people I know have done that, and you're just like overnight, it's like complete body transformation that's permanent. Well, I guess not with lasers, but it's still like so serious. You're like, what the. Why did you, man, you hit that hard. And I don't know what happened.
I think tattooing is a bit of an addiction. I feel like I've talked to people who like they've had two for like a long time and then they get the third one and like something snaps and they're like, this feels really good to me now. Like the pleasure of the experience like kicks in or something.
I mean, there are tattoo shops everywhere in Portland. Everyone's tatted here.
Yeah, really. Here in the Northwest, tattoos are huge. Sadly, the Russian group Tattoo is not huge, but that's how life is, I guess. But the Northwest, it's like tattoos are big, smoking is big. You know, it's kind of like really weird because I thought tattoos, of course, were very mainstream back in the 40s for all the GIs. That's the 1940s for you folks listening. In the 1940s, tattoos were very big because of all the GIs. But then it feels like tattoos kind of went out of style, and then they came back in style in the 80s, and then I thought they went out of style in the 90s, but then now it's back in style. I don't know. I just don't understand it because there's so many different ways of expressing yourself. It seems to me whoever gets tattoos now, well, it's like all the English footballers who you can't understand what they're saying anyway. So,
I've been helping a friend of mine draw a stegosaurus tattoo. She's got a bird on one arm and she wants a stegosaurus on the other. So I've been helping her with that. But she's a cartoonist also. But I'm more of the dinosaur expert. So that's my most recent tattoo story. But somebody got a full like back tattoo of Cthulhu that I designed. So there's some of my art.
Does that feel like a big responsibility?
No, not to me, because I don't care. I'm not the one getting tattooed.
Dennis, what you're saying is that any Buffy Virgin listener who wants a tattoo should just tweet at the Buffy Virgin Twitter account.
Yeah. Or my
Dennis
Twitter, Dennis Comics.
Care about.
You can commission a tattoo from me. I do daily monster drawings on my Twitter account also and Instagram. You guys can check those out.
If somebody wanted to just download the logo of Buffy Virgin and get that tattooed, would that be all right, Dennis? Would that be okay with you?
We would very much encourage that, yes.
All right.
If you get a Buffy Virgin tattoo, we will feature you on the Twitter for like a month. We'll just keep posting that picture.
Right. We'll pin that tweet.
We will pin that tweet, yeah.
So, but my question though is like, why do you think none of us have joined this club? Is it just that like we're that uncool, or because I feel like I have my reasons for not having jumped on this particular bandwagon, but I'm wondering why you think that is.
I mean, I guess we never figured out the draw. Like neither my parents have tattoos, right? None of the characters, none of the people that I'm really like into, like artist wise, have tattoos. It's like I just miss that cultural moment for myself. Like I don't associate tattoos with anything positive. I mean, I think they're kind of cool. Like I think ladies with a lot of tattoos, that's kind of sexy. But it's like almost like a type of lady. It's like, oh, the tattoo lady. It's like a different genre of lady. Like you know, if you were to just have a bunch of
Lydia, Lydia, have you seen Lydia, Lydia, the tattooed lady?
I don't find them unpleasant. They're just kind of like, they're not the symbols of cultural revolution that maybe they once were. It's more like a fashion statement of individuality. And like, but it's crazy how thoughtlessly people get them, right? Because you'll like, I'm going to get a tattoo. Like you have a bunch, so let's go get one. And you give $100 to somebody because you're bored or something. I mean, there's definitely an element for the pain, I'm sure, for people that they like, because it's kind of a pleasurable pain sensation. But like, dude, I don't know. My wife has tattoos once a bunch. I think it's fine. She wants to work with somebody to get some professional designs and stuff. And like, we were going through that process and she wanted to go to Tattoo Expo and talk to those people with tattoos on their heads and shit. And like, I don't know. It seems like a cult, like a fun cult. And you get one, you're in, and you can go pretty deep down it. And like, once you have one, you're on the hook now.
Yeah. One of my recommendations for this week is it has a lot of tattoos in it. So that'll come up when it comes
What
up,
about you, John? Why aren't you tattooed?
Well, I think it's kind of what you said. Like, I always felt like whatever you get a tattoo of, you're getting a tattoo of a tattoo more than you're getting a tattoo of that thing. Like, if I go and get a Star Trek tattoo, it says to everybody, hey, I like this thing. But what it says more than anything else is like you said, I'm part of this tattoo culture. That's the biggest statement you're making, regardless of what the actual content of the tattoo is. It's what it seems like to me. Like, the medium is the message with tattoos, right? So, And I, like you said, I don't really find that culture to be particularly enthralling, although I have nothing against it, really. I think it's fine.
Well, like, I never, when I pass by a tattoo shop, I'm not like, oh, I want to go in and look at their designs. Like, yeah. It's just a form of art that's kind of just been like a foreign door to me. I'm not interested in going in that door. But it's not like, I don't feel like I'm missing out either.
I do sometimes, because like, it really is everybody I know at this point who is around my age. It seems like it's everybody.
But I think people embark on it foolishly without realizing the implications of tattoos' association with criminal and underworld culture. Like, even though we don't commonly do that, like, you know, tattoos mean nothing in the United States. It's just individuality. But like, I just finished this three-volume series called Russian Criminal Tattoo. And like, every tattoo that they look at, all these prison tattoos, all have this deep meanings about what gang of thieves you're in and what status you have. And like, they're fucking super meaningful.
Yeah,
and some
like
of the tattoos
Eastern Promises.
Yeah. And like tattoos, like, so I have friends that have a bunch of tattoos that went to Japan recently. They couldn't use the public baths. You know, they had to go to a special like foreigner Gaijin bath, whatever, you know, because like
baths of shame.
So it's like, that's the real implication of tattoos. Like, hey, someone might think you're in a gang. You can't use the baths in Tokyo.
I think for me, tattoos are always about...
And I want to use those baths, man.
Those are the good ones.
I think the reason I don't have one is that it's just a form of expression.
I'm going to... I'm sorry, I'm going to Japan in the fall. I forgot to tell you guys that. But
cool.
Japan's, ooh. So... It'll be fun.
Well, let's come back. All right. Well, the reason I'm just going to finish off this and say that, you know, I don't think I need a tattoo because I can express myself in other ways. And I feel like for a long time, the tattoo is a way to express yourself. If there's something that you, some reason you can't express or you don't want to express or, so for a long time, that's how I felt about tattoos. And then at this point, I'm much with the thinking of John, which is the tattoo itself is the expression, not so much the content of that tattoo. So I definitely agree with John in that respect. And then finally, for me, I would rather go big or go home with a tattoo. I wouldn't get a single tattoo. I would have my entire back done like a Yakuza gangster because that's the lifestyle I would want to lead. I had tattoos. I would be leading the Yakuza gangster lifestyle, guys. if I ever said I got a tattoo, watch out because things have gone south for me. I'm not going to get a butterfly tattoo or anything like that. It will be, you know, something horrible will have happened and... that's what I would be up to. So that's for me how the tattoo situation would work.
Yeah, I mean, at the period of life in which I would have gotten a tattoo, I've been in a relationship and like haven't really hasn't come up. So next question here: in Giles' youthful gang, do you think he was the one that introduced them to magic? Yes, definitely Giles. He has the most guilt. And everyone is trying to get Giles.
I just think it's interesting. This like that would be a good story of or whatever of him like, it, like joining this gang that they're like troublemakers or whatever, and he like makes them 1,000 times worse by introducing like black magic into them, like, and obviously he sets Ethan Rain on a course of evil for his entire life.
Yeah, Giles is definitely the guy that's into Wicca and doesn't know the implications of it. I mean, I love the foolishness of the idea of how they present, you know, this kind of transformation that they go through in like their Ouija style parties. So weird.
It's an extraordinary high. Yeah.
Do you like how he laughs when he says that? He has like the worst delivery of like someone who's remorseful. It's like, it's the most extraordinary high. You know, it's like Giles hasn't really given up that beast.
He's still chasing that dragon.
Yeah, he's still chasing that dragon.
The demon in this episode, and I think Ethan, this is from you, Dennis, in Halloween, both say, "Be seeing you." Are they fans of The Prisoner? Well, as we know, every TV writer is a huge fan of The Prisoner. It's incredibly influential to people that write for television.
Yes.
So I'm sure it's done knowledgeably, especially if they have a British person in this.
Yeah. And they're both, I don't know, maybe it was part of their gang, was the demon is referencing, like, remember when we used to get high together and watch The Prisoner?
That's probably what this is all about. I don't know who wrote this episode, but yeah, probably they just got high and watched old British spy movies, spy shows.
Yeah, that's Giles' misspent youth.
And then you have another follow-up question here. Does Ethan understand who Buffy is? I don't know.
He doesn't seem like surprised by her strength, but he's never like, I guess. Yeah, I think
he does.
Yeah.
He does, because that's the whole reason he goes to see Buffy in the beginning, because he knows the zombie is after him and he's going to hide behind her. Like, he puts her in front of him physically. And
I thought he was looking for Giles at the beginning.
And also in Halloween, he makes a comment about Buffy being the Slayer.
Oh, he does?
I think he does, yeah.
I don't remember that from Halloween. I remember being confused about that then also, because, like, why did he target Buffy? Does he know, but, like, I guess he could have known that Giles is a Watcher. Like, he knows that that's why Giles left, like, Fancy Town to, like, rebel against Watcherdom. So he would have been, like, who's the teenage girl he's hanging out with the most? That's the Slayer.
his line is, Buffy's like, there's no way I could possibly afford this dress. And he says, for you, my dear, I think I can make an exception. Something like that. That's his line. I just thought he was creepy. Like, I wasn't convinced that he knew that she was a Slayer. I thought he just, like, would stick any poor defenseless human in front of him because Ethan Rain is a bad man.
And he's into being beat up by Giles. That's his thing.
Loves it.
I want to tell everyone that I had a spoiler when we watched this together because I still can't get over this. Michael, Dennis, and I watched this together, and I was really tired and kind of a bit crazy. And we're watching this episode. I spoiled the episode by accident, except Mike didn't really know it. But in the library scene, Buffy was listing all of her grievances against Ethan Rain. And then I said, what about that grievance where he gives you a tattoo, Buffy? Out loud. And that was 30 minutes before that was happening. And
it just sounded out of context to me, so I did not even register what the comment meant. Yeah. As you'll find, most of the time when people slip up and reveal secrets, people around them do not know what the fuck you're talking about, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It was funny, though, that you felt some guilt or anxiety about that. So I take pleasure in that.
There's tons of anxiety, and I was just, I didn't even know where I was in the Buffyverse. I didn't know what had happened, what hadn't happened.
You're lost in the verse.
I was lost in the verse, man. I was tired. I was just floating in the verse. Yeah.
So, themes, deep stuff. John, you have a great one here.
Yeah, so I was just watching, and I'm really sorry to have to do this, but I was just watching Star Trek The Next Generation and the episode, Tapestry. And really briefly, the premise of the episode is that Captain Picard dies and Q sort of rescues him in the last moment before he dies and says, like, the reason you died is because your artificial heart is failing. And wouldn't you like to go back and change your life? Because the reason that Captain Picard has an artificial heart is because he picked a fight with some big Nausicaans, big aliens, and they stabbed him through the heart. And he's saying, okay, you can go back and not pick that fight. And Captain Picard does it. And he finds out that the consequence of not picking the fight is that he gets to, you know, not have an artificial heart, but also he's not a person who takes risks. And the moral of the story very directly is, like, you know, you shouldn't regret the mistakes of your youth, because even though they might've been mistakes, technically they, like, you know, they made you the person you are today, and you should be proud of who you are today and all that. And this episode has the exact opposite moral of that, where, you know, Giles is like, he really should feel bad about who he was in his youth and shitty, like, kid mistakes of, like, you know, taking drugs or magic drugs or whatever, like, really do have consequences that reverberate into his presence. Even though, like, he's grown up, it doesn't matter. He made mistakes in the past. Like, that's a really sad message. If it's, I don't know if that's what it is.
Like all Starfleet, you talk and you talk, but you have no Gramja.
Play Damjat, human.
Oh my God. I think I have the opposite take of John, which is, I think it's a great message, because to try to have people be more responsible for their youth, I guess. Because maybe back in the day, 120 years ago, 200 years ago, you know, you're not going to really get up to all that much, you know, all that much drama, all that much trouble, right? You know, you live in the fields, you know, there's a windmill, you know, there's a seed, there's the different seasons where you harvest crops. But it's like not a lot of like bad stuff, right? You live in a small town.
I don't know. I think,
what? Well, this makes no sense. Wait, what's the windmill? What's going on? I blanked.
See? You don't even pay attention to me. So what I'm saying is, I'm trying to say is, back in the day, you know, 100, 200, 500 years ago, you know, you could only get into so much trouble, right? Because most people,
I think, could get into the same amount of trouble.
Angel about that.
You could still stab somebody. You could still get high. You could get into an argument with your dad and then get on a boat and never see your family for the rest of your life. Like,
well, that's a brave man getting on that boat.
Oh man, we need to talk about boats, but. No, what I'm trying to say is, I guess, that when you live in a small village, you know, a pastoral existence, yeah, a lot of bad things can happen. War can ravage your town. You can get ravaged by smallpox, you know, tuberculosis. Lots of bad things happen to you, right? But on the whole, it's not like you had a whole lot of huge avenues to do damage or consequences, right? Or, you know, the actions, you know, maybe you stole some bread. Well, actually, those are big consequences. Okay, so back in the day, they had bad penalties. What I'm saying is, you know, there's the potential for getting up to so much crazy bad crap in this age we live in. That God, maybe there should be more. We shouldn't dumb down young adulthood. Maybe that's my point. You shouldn't dumb down young adulthood because a lot of bad shit happens. And, you know, maybe just because it's in the media today, but there's all kinds of crazy things where, you know, kids can, you know, 10, 11 years old, like, you know, fake suicides. And then there's a lot of bad things that happen. And I feel like, yeah, Giles should be held accountable. He was at least 18, 19 when he, you know, did all this crazy magic stuff. So I don't know. Why shouldn't he be held accountable?
I think you're right that Giles should be held accountable, or like, I'm not so sure that the message is one I disagree with.
I think the message is more about, from Buffy's point of view, about learning that a guy like Giles wasn't always like the Giles they think he is now, right?
Right.
It's like learning, grown-ups are people, like demons are people, like people are people.
But I don't think
Mike's gone. Now's the time to do spoilers.
I don't think anybody in the world, Travis, is going to agree with your troubled youth started in 1950 belief system. I think that's
not what I was trying to. The troubled youth. It's a more cumulative amount of misbehaving or consequences. I guess I wasn't sure where you're going with that. I think Buffy's take is actually really good, where, you know, all adults were once kids and did make mistakes once.
But they should do an episode where all the adults become kids. I bet that'd be great.
I was just saying that, I don't know, I got confused with your take on the Starfleet situation, which is like, you know, love and live by your mistakes kind of form you, which I guess I don't disagree with, but I don't know. I guess I wasn't quite understanding what was going on.
Yeah, I think both are probably true.
With any of my,
I watched the episode of Voyager recently where Harry Kim becomes an alien and he like has to choose between the Voyager or like three wives.
What's the moral of that story, Dennis?
Harry Kim's an idiot and they should have left him.
So in my real life, I find that you actually can reinvent yourself constantly, and there aren't too many consequences for your actions. And because as someone that's moved, like moving is the cleanest slate you get. And, you know, like I moved from Ohio to Florida, Florida to now Oregon. Like as soon as you move, you get to represent yourself any way you like. No one, like going to a new job, I mean, it's just like clean slate. No one gives an F. It is funny though, like if you try and represent yourself one way, like the biggest challenge for this is really in high school where you can't reinvent yourself. And I think we talked about this where it's like, I'm pretending to be like, for instance, in that awesome weird scene where Buffy's trying to get with Owen, but there's also Angel and, you know, Xander and Willow in a room together with Cordelia. And there's all these competing ideas of who's what and what their motives are, which is a very high school scenario. Like I'm trying to be cool and hang out with friends and I'm going to bring alcohol because I'm cool and we can't legally have it. And then a parent's like, you're a child and you're not cool. And it's like, these are the competing versions of yourself, right? I think like if I lived in an environment though with my parents, that would probably change everything. If your parents are around, they call out all the identities the way they see them. And especially if they're visiting constantly or like live next door or something. So phrasing this, if you move away from home and your parents aren't nearby, you can be anyone you want anytime.
I mean, yeah, if you just like take the social security number of a dead person and like move to a new town, you can do anything you want. There's no consequences. Totally a good idea.
It's really easy to create new Facebook accounts.
Yeah, but if you and your bunch of friends like did some crazy drugs where there's some kind of death involved. I mean, that stuff like haunts you. Like a friend of mine has a documentary he put together about a buddy of his that had died from an OD. One of his high school friends died from an OD. And like, he had to make that documentary. It had to come out. It's like 10 years later, he had to make it because he felt so much guilt and responsibility for it. And like an artistic expression is good. Like, I mean, I think everybody appreciates it and gave them a lot of relief for that thing to exist, like to create a cathartic moment out of something that people never got to, like never had catharsis. So like that kind of regret is like, that's a kind of a positive one, but in a way that where it had a positive ending.
So we covered regret and breakfast. Is there anything else that we need to talk about?
I think those are the big themes.
All right. So moving on to predictions. Can we talk about it? Have any predictions closed in this episode?
Yes, they have. These aren't terribly old ones, but two episodes ago, you predicted that people would remember the Halloween episode, and there is a callback to the Halloween episode in this episode. So perhaps that was not the riskiest bet, but that one is now confirmed. And you also predicted that Ethan Rain will appear in another episode. And
brilliant prediction.
Yes. So those are two, again, not your riskiest predictions, Mike, but they turned out to be true only two episodes later.
I wish I
all right, no, but okay, since it's only been two episodes, do you want to keep, rather than confirming it and closing it, we want to keep it rolling? Keep that prediction rolling?
Oh, that Ethan Rain will be back again?
I think the Halloween episode will be remembered again. Just keep them rolling.
I think what we should do is confirm these, and then Mike can choose to renew it with a fresh prediction of Ethan Rain will appear yet again.
But it's got to be double or it's got to be double or nothing though, because either he returns or it's like he didn't return at all.
You're making the game so much more complicated, Dennis. Double or nothing. That's like a whole different spreadsheet formula I have to invent.
How does a double or nothing prediction work? I predicted one thing. If it happens a second time. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course I want to. Yeah, I think he'll be back. This came true too soon. Yeah, and there hasn't been exciting consequences like the way I want. So yeah, double or nothing. Double him up. I predict Ethan Rain will return again and be angry than ever. And Ethan Rain will return. I don't know what he's going to do. It's unpredictable. But he'll be back. And Halloween will have greater consequences than this, than just being brought up. I mean, like, it's going to come up. Maybe they'll discuss it again. Maybe by the next Halloween.
Okay, so let me understand what this really means. Okay, so you predict that Ethan Rain will appear a third time.
Yes.
You also claim that the Halloween episode will be called back again in a grander way, right?
Yeah, because I mean they brought it up, okay. So it's clearly important that we remember that it happened. So they're going to do some more with it.
Okay. So, okay, that's fine.
Specifically, that's I think they're going to talk about the fact that Willow was
the rules work is,
which is really if, messed
it
up.
It turns out that you're wrong.
What?
So if I'm wrong, then the predictions never happened?
Wait a second.
Then you don't get the points anymore for this week's predictions that came true.
Do I get points?
Isn't this the point system?
Score.
But if they do, but if they do, then you get double points.
Presently, Mike, as of this recording, I have you at 85% accurate, 85.7% accurate.
Okay, I need to make some wilder predictions then, obviously.
Yeah, I think you need to be a little riskier. But this double or nothing situation is going to make my math harder, and like I'm going to forget to apply it later.
It does. You don't really have
to. I predict that John will forget to apply the double or nothing point system.
That is not a risky prediction. That's betting that Landis will forget something is a fairly safe bet.
Plandis.
I predict that Star Trek will come up again in another episode of The Convergent. I predict that Cordelia will kill a vampire.
Michael, any more predictions for this episode? Anything about Igon? Anything about this or that or anything?
Oh, you think
Igon? No, I'm just prompting you so we can finish your predictions.
Oh, we will learn more about Giles' shady past. I think in this season, because it's been brought up and this is barely enough information. And there's been two Ethan Rain episodes. I think we got to learn more about Giles in this season.
So, make it rain.
So gross.
Okay. Those are good. So we have, I've got, all right. Ethan Rain will appear yet again. The Halloween episode will be called back specifically that Willow was a ghost. Cordelia will kill a vampire.
Yep.
And we will learn about Giles' past more so. We'll learn more about it in season two.
Yes, this season, exactly. To some climactic moment, though it may not appear climactic. So, yes, just more. The Igon stuff, I don't feel like I don't know about the tattoo stuff, whether or not that's going to come back. I got to think about that. I mean, the tattoo's not going away. Tattoo. Well,
Buffy's is. Buffy's is going away.
Yeah, but not Giles's tattoo.
Yeah, that's a good question. Is Giles going to get his tattoo removed?
No, Giles is not getting his tattoo removed. That's a prediction.
That's a prediction?
Giles will not have his tattoo removed. Jenny Calendar will remember that she was possessed, and it will have a impact on the relationship she has with Giles. Jenny Calendar will have sex with Giles this season.
Whoa. Okay, wait a second. So Jenny will have sex with Giles in season two.
Yep.
But she'll also continue to hold the possession against him, right?
When it's convenient for her, she's going to bring it up.
Okay. Got it. This is a lot of predictions for.
Okay, but I'll stop now.
No, that's good. I think more predictions is good. It means we're more likely to actually have ones to talk about later.
All right, then I'll start working on more predictions. I think of dumb things when watching the show. I just never. Anyway.
God damn it, Mike! Get on it.
I know. Sorry. All right, Dennis's kill count for this episode.
Okay, I had 3 humans/demons. So I counted the one guy twice who we saw die, and then come back and then die again. 2 vampires and 1 just straight up demon gets poofed without a human body. I think that's accurate. I actually watched, you know what, though? I have 2 separate sections of notes because I watched this another time and I ended up with 4 humans/demon. So I don't know. It's not important. My kill count is dumb.
All right, recommendations?
Yeah, because it's a possession episode and because of the way Jenny does a total like 180 from being possessed and looking like a monster, I thought about Evil Dead 2 because I feel like that's the most, like, the movie where the possessions are the most similar to this. And then, so, I mean, everybody's seen Evil Dead 2. It's great. And then I also am suggesting, and it's a little bit of an odder one because I was thinking about possessions and I was like, there's this movie that's not about demon possessions, but somebody is not in control of their actions because of another kind of possession, and that's Santa Sangre. Have any of you guys seen that?
No.
Santa Sangre is Santa Sangre is this amazing movie. It's Yoderowski, and it's got a lot of tattoo stuff about it, so it's connected to the show in that way. But basically, there's a ton going on in this movie. Like, it starts in a circus with like a tattooed lady and an elephant funeral, and then it like this woman gets her arms cut off by her husband, and like then like years later, her son becomes her hands for this like vaudeville act, this like performance act, and it's like then because of weird shit, whenever he becomes attracted to a woman, his mom possesses his hands and makes him kill the woman he is attracted to. So that's the possession. But that's like only 1/10 of the weirdness in this movie. It's such a good, crazy movie. It has like, it's called Santa Sangre because the mom character worships this like unofficial saint who had her arms chopped off, and then she like bleeds into this pool of blood that it's like this never-ending pool of blood. That's like her miracle. I mean, this is such a weird movie. But yeah, there's a tattooed lady in it, and the father character tattoos his son with a eagle on his chest when he's like 9. It's really intense. It's a really good movie. It's fucking crazy.
Man, that's almost like another podcast Hodorowski challenge to just like watch all crazy movies because they're so weird. I only know Holy Mountain.
And the challenge is also try to describe the plot. Like, try to describe the plot of El Topo. Like,
nope. There are humans.
So those are my recs.
Humans made a movie. I'm going to recommend Midnight Sun, which I mentioned earlier, 2011 indie vampire movie, where it includes a scene where a dude buys blood from a guy that works at a hospital and has a great line that I love, which is the guy who's buying the blood is like, "Hey man, aren't you concerned about why I'm buying this blood?" And the nurse or whatever is like, "Man, everybody's got their thing." Which is like this wonderful truism about life. Like, everybody's got their thing. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, I think we've reached the end of the podcast. We will, of course, remind you to check out the Buffy Twitter account, which is Buffy Twitter Pod. The Instagram account, Buffy Virgin, to follow and at Michael Poley, to follow and at Dennis Comics.
And Dennis Saint Comics on Instagram. Daily monster drawings.
Right. And some of them feature Buffy characters, which is amazing. We've added a recommendations page to the site. So if you forget to write down all the recommendations, or if you never listen to this section at all, you can go to the recommendations page and see all the things we recommend that are like that episode of Buffy, usually all Dennis's recommendations, except when he's not on. And also you can follow the predictions there. So thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.